We go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, joined by Scott Miller of Bleacher Report. Scott, thanks for taking a couple minutes.
Hey, Jonathan, how are you?
I'm good. I am trying to assess the situation with the Indians relative to the rest of the American League, though, and I see the gap there. I see the gap between the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Astros, and what this Indians team can actually accomplish and what they can get done. But then I just pivot back to my mind, well, once you get punched your ticket into the postseason with a double-digit lead in the Central, all you have to do is get in order to win. How far, though, if we're assessing deals at the deadline and what the Indians have to do, how far away do you believe they are from hitting that top three tier?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything you just said is fair. Coming into the season, I thought there were going to be four super teams in the American League, Red Sox, Yankees, Astros, and I had Cleveland there. But, you know, obviously there's a gap between those three and Cleveland. You know, the Indians just haven't exhibited the power of the other teams. I think, you know, probably we're going to see the Indians add bullpen help at the deadline, I would think. I mean, you know, right now with Andrew Miller on the disabled list, I mean, that's obviously, I don't need to tell you, a huge, huge obstacle for the Indians. You know, I mean, we saw the bullpen, you know, lose it yesterday to Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's kind of the conundrum with the running away in the American League Central. You know, the good thing is, you know, you can keep Andrew Miller on the disabled list, as it looks, you know, like Terry Francona and the Indians are doing, and just totally take your time. You know, just give him every bit of time he needs, bring him back slowly. Hope when he comes back, whenever that is, late July or August, that the knee's in good shape, and then you've got a completely healthy Andrew Miller. Then if that scenario develops, well, then, you know, the gap between those other three teams and the Indians is closed a fair amount. You know, not completely, but, you know, it's closed some. So that's a good thing about having this giant lead in the Central. You know, you can afford the luxury of time with guys like that. But, you know, the flip side, of course, is, you know, you can't get lulled into some false sense of security and say, well, we're going to win the division anyway, and, you know, guys will come back and things will fall into place. I mean, I think that's going to be the trick for the front office, you know, Chris Antonetti and his crew, that, you know, what deals they need to make in July. Now, if, you know, Michael Brantley back in the lineup, mm-hmm, being healthy is a good thing. But, you know, I think given Andrew Miller's knee, I would look at, you know, you can never have enough relievers. You've seen how postseason games go in October, and the bullpen decides so many of them.
Yeah, Scott, it was a great point you just brought up in between there. How do you manufacture that environment of big baseball that the Indians and Chris Antonetti and that staff will have to try to get through, where they're playing, yep, loose right now, and then you get on that big stage, all of a sudden, yep, game one of the ALDS, it's as big of a moment as you're going to get, and you have to tighten up a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think the fact that this particular group is no stranger to October is going to help. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think, you know, we're not talking about an untested postseason team that is going to step onto that field for game one of the division series and, you know, tighten up because they haven't been there before. I think number one, that's the biggest thing that's going to help. But, you know, it's such an unpredictable game because, I mean, look at the 20 what game winning streak last
22?
September?
Mm-hmm.
22. And, you know, then come the playoffs and the Yankees clip the Indians. You know, I mean, during that 22 game winning streak, you know, in the moment, it's like, okay, can't wait for the playoffs. Indians are as good as there is, and you just don't know. I mean, you know, one year you can have a 22 game winning streak, and then you get beat in the division series. You know, one year you can, you know, not have that. You can not necessarily even be playing all that well, but you get into October, and as you said early, Jonathan, once you get that ticket punched, you know, you've got as good a chance just about as anybody, and if you get hot at the right moment, you can run the table.
Yeah, and I think that's just a matter of what they have to do. Timing is everything in this scenario, and
right,
I think that's where they're trying to balance as well. The Manny Machado discussion that we continue to have pop up over and over here is, well, you don't need him for the postseason. Teams like the Dodgers and Phillies, you'll need him to get to the postseason if you need the two and a half games that his value would be added. Indians don't necessarily need that. So how do you offset the cost if it is a Francisco Mejia or someone like that, and plus probably more than that? How do you offset that cost for what could potentially be 15 to 20 at bats in the ALDS?
Right. Yeah. And that's the tough question facing the team right now. I mean, I would be awfully wary of making that deal. If I'm the Indians, for the reason you said, they're going to win the division. There's no secret there. So now you look at, okay, you know, whomever acquires Machado, I mean, that's a swing for the fence to win it all type of move, no question. But as you laid out, and you're exactly right, certain teams that are in division battles are going to need Machado just to get to October, let alone win. I mean, if I'm Cleveland, I look at other alternatives to flush out my roster and to add depth and maybe add a weapon here and a weapon there in October over emptying out my farm system of its top prospects for, as you say, would it be 15 or 20 events in October? I mean, you know, if you could guarantee, okay, we're going to trade Mejia and three other guys and Machado's going to come and we're going to move Ramirez to second, and we're going to win the World Series. I mean, you know, obviously, if you could guarantee that scenario, I think it's worth it. But short of that, boy, it's a risky move for a team that already knows they're going to be in the playoffs.
Joined by Bleacher Report, Scott Miller here on 92.3 The Fan. You know, Scott, we mentioned Francisco Mejia because he's always brought up in these trade conversations, has been for the past 2 years, even going back to the Jonathan Lucroy trade that eventually got vetoed. At this point, you know, Tito, I don't know if you heard the comments or not yesterday, but Tito said that Francisco isn't really that willing to go play right field. He could be up in the majors right now if he wanted to play outfield. He's got a block at catcher, though, between Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez. If you're Francisco Mejia, how do you put that? How do you put your own personal, what you believe to be right and you being a big league catcher, how do you put that over what's better for the team? And I'm Scott, I'm a player first guy, so I'll always stand by the player knows what's best for themselves. To me, though, comes off a little selfish for Francisco Mejia, and maybe not to examine all the possible situations, even if it does cost him some dollars down the road.
Yeah, it does. Short term comes off selfish, no question. I mean, you know, from his perspective, assuming all that's accurate, I mean, you can see, you know, there's such a dearth of catchers at the big league level, and at least in terms of well-rounded catchers,
yeah,
who have a bat and can, you know, I mean, other than Miami's JT Realmuto, you know, Yadier Molina in St. Louis was that way for a while, but you know, he's you know, still really good, but a little past his prime. But you can count on one hand probably the catchers who are well-rounded enough to hurt you offensively and defensively. So, you know, from Mejia's perspective, certainly, you know, you reach a majors as a catcher with the skills and tools he has, that's going to be hugely valuable to the team, but also to him as he negotiates his contracts. There's no question about that. But, you know, I mean, short-term, if there's a chance to come up and play right field and, you know, without completely abandoning catching. I mean, you know, who's to say you can't come up and, you know, temporarily play some right field and, you know, worry about going back to catching later. I understand, as you say, you know, you got Gomes ahead of you and he's blocked in Cleveland, but I mean, if this is going to be the attitude, that, you know, throw him in a Machado deal,
right?
And don't look back.
Yeah, you just don't worry about it, and just caught it as a we're good enough a catcher as we are. We don't necessarily need that in the long term for what we're going for. Scott Miller, Bleacher Report, joining us here on 92.3 The Fan. Trevor Bauer is an interesting case for me, Scott, because he's got a lot of off-field just quirkiness more than anything else. You know, going at Rob Manfred a couple times, worried about the pace of play, different things he does on Twitter. But then you look at his production and you see the moves he's made and the changeup and the slider that he's worked on this offseason. Trevor Bauer is a top five pitcher in baseball right now. What's the perception of Trevor Bauer and what he's been able to accomplish and how he's been able to do it while pretty much going at the game and what we think mechanically pitchers should be doing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think in this sport, and it's probably like a lot of different walks in life, but, you know, I mean, anybody that's different is always looked on with suspicion, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it was that way when we were in fifth grade, you know, we're in our fifth grade classes and there's somebody over there that, you know, does things differently than everybody else. So the rest of the class looks over with suspicion and sometimes disdain. And, you know, that's so many walks of life. And I think that's where Trevor Bauer has been in for much of his baseball career. I found it interesting. I mean, you know, he admitted over the winter, right, or in spring training, like, I don't think I've been the best teammate. So then this spring, one of his missions this spring was to spend time in the clubhouse trying to talk to guys to be a better teammate. You know, I mean, you know, I used to cover the Minnesota Twins several years ago in the 90s when Tom Kelly was manager. And Tom Kelly used to say, the mind is a very, very dangerous thing. And it can be. And I think it's that way with Trevor Bauer. But, you know, that said, the one great thing I think about baseball, well, about sports in general, but to take baseball since we're talking about that with Trevor Bauer, unlike so much else in life, especially without going down the politics road, especially politics, but so much in life, there's so many gray areas, and we can argue and shout and scream and walk away, and you think you're right, I think I'm right, and that's just the way it is. The great thing in sports, especially in baseball, and Trevor Bauer showing it this year, is the scoreboard, the box score, there are final results. And so, you know, for all the arguing with Trevor Bauer that he's done with some organizations in the past about, hey, I want to train this way. I'm not training the way everybody else is doing it or has done it for 100 years. I want to do this. Right now, Trevor Bauer, you know, he's emerging later maybe than some people wanted or hoped for or expected, but he is emerging as one of the best pitchers in the game. And there's no question he is this year. And, you know, right now you look at all these other quirks and you say, okay, you know, Trevor, you got to hand it to him. He's taken some hits verbally and otherwise, and he's coming out on top right now. And, you know, from that perspective, I think more power to him. I mean, I think we should see him in the All-Star game. And, probably Luis Severino is going to start. I mean, Justin Verlander would be the guy, but it looks like Verlander is going to pitch next Sunday, which would probably rule him out for starting. But so probably go Severino. But, I mean, Bauer is pretty high up in that conversation to start, let alone make the team.
That's amazing, the leaps and bounds that he's come in just 1 year. And, yeah, you're right. If not for Severino, you can make a hard case that he would be the starter in that game. Scott Miller, Bleacher Report, I appreciate the time giving us a couple minutes. Always enjoy your insight and enjoy your work over there at Bleacher Report as well. We'll catch up with you down the road.
My pleasure, Jonathan. Thank you.